And I am grateful to be here tonight. I thought when I was asked that I would go into usual Maryland mode and see this as such a terrible burden and such a responsibility. And I'm really enjoying this. I'm enjoying the opportunity to get into the steps in a different way and grow because of that. So here we go. I want to do a little review first. And that's just to put the steps that we've done into a progression of sorts, steps 1 through 5. To get to where we're going, which is happy, joyous, and free, I think, we have to work at it. We have to go through a progression. And as we do that, I believe we grow. I'm going to move this down just slightly. Yeah. So, admission of powerlessness, step 1. Our next one is belief in a higher power, or coming to belief. I wouldn't even say that that's really something that we have firmed up at that point. And then 3, made a decision. And I make decisions all the time, as I'm sure you do too. And decisions are tricky too, because you do need 4 and 5, because you have to go into action. You can make a decision, but if you don't act on the decision that you make, then it doesn't do anything. It's just a decision. So I think I've said before that I use a couple different things that we have as resources, and the Joe McHugh book is one of them. That's the steps we took. And then the big book, of course, and the 12 and 12. And then sometimes I look at stuff online, but that's kind of tricky. I have to be careful with that. But Joe McHugh states, so you see, these steps are actions that we carry out, that will carry out the decision that we make in step 3. The results will not be based on the decision itself, but on the actions we take as a result of that decision. So decisions aren't effective. I think you'll hear that now, unless you take action. So we're down to step 4, and step 4 is making a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. We're still in the we, not the me, but it is an individual process. Without a searching and fearless moral inventory, most of us has found that the faith, which really works in daily living, is still out of reach. And I think all along, throughout my life, that's what I was searching for, was a practical faith that worked. And that's from the 12 and 12. I had some resistance to step 4, and I think it was mostly fear of the unknown. I always avoided things that I feared. That was the way that I dealt with them, I guess. So that included feelings, truths, consequences, anything that was a result of my drinking and behavior that impacted others, I would try to just not think about. So in step 4, what we're doing is we're beginning to learn to look inward and then outward with a new perspective and the new pair of glasses, so to speak. And this is a very, very important faith step as far as I'm concerned. So I'm going to go over, like I have in the other steps, I'm going to go over the words, the actual words, but very briefly in the step, because I think it's very significant. Made is the first one. And it refers to the past tense of to make. It's a no-brainer. Something produced or carried out by action is what to make basically means. Searching is examining carefully and thoroughly. Fearless, not focused so much on negative outcomes. When driven by fears, of course, we can't get to the solution because we're stuck in the fears. Moral is concerned with principles. And principles are important. Principles of right and wrong, behaviors, whether they be good or bad, human character, a person's standards of behavior or beliefs. In my drinking days, toward the end, I became aware that I have broken every single value and moral that I thought I lived by. And it really took a toll on my self-esteem and made me feel more hopeless and depressed than usual. And then the last word is inventory. And the big book talks about the business inventory. We take a inventory or a complete list of the things about us, our feelings, behaviors, our actions. And that has to be searching and fearless, because there was a lot of fear connected with truth in my life. So, I don't have all my stuff out here. One of the things that I did not understand, and I tried to do a fourth step and didn't do a very good job, because I didn't really have a clear understanding of what the big book was talking about when it talked about basic instincts. And Joe McHugh explained it very well and even came up with a neat little chart that I enlarged. And it really helped me to understand the whole process. But he called it the basic instincts of life which create self. And our basic instincts are the social instinct, the security instinct, and the sex instinct. They're all parts of the self and our uniqueness. And we are God's creation, and that is how He created us, with those unique characteristics. Now, being a unique person was not something that I was familiar with. And some of you know this. But I see, I have trifocals, everything about me is three, I'm a triplet. And if that wasn't enough about identity, I have a triplet brother and I have an identical twin sister. And we don't look so much alike today, but we do have the exact same voice patterns. So, you know, I have to listen to myself on the phone from time to time. Oh, well. So to be unique and to be a creation of God is something that we need to value and pursue. So the social instinct includes companionship, prestige, I guess. I don't relate so much to that, because I'm one of those people that'd rather be unseen than seen. But self-esteem, pride, personal relationships, with, you know, close relationships, but with the world around us too, and ambitions. All three instincts have those. And notes that has, for some it's power, for some it's just acceptance, and also recognition. Who doesn't like to be acknowledged instead of being called "hey you" or just overlooked? The security instinct then has to do more with maybe material things, feeling safe, comfortable, having what we need to survive around us, emotional, and then of course, again, ambitions. And some of us have maybe larger ambitions than others. I think that's okay, but we all have them. And then the sex instinct, you can divide that into two things. One's the acceptable, and that's by things that are socially acceptable by our social or society or whatever you want to call it. And then there's those things that we consider to be principles that God, you know, sort of lets us know that we need to have. And then we have the hidden. And that's where we get into trouble, because it's usually contrary to all of the above, and so we keep it hidden. So those are the basic instincts, and the thing about them is they're God-given, and I had to get that through my head, because I didn't necessarily see them as gifts, because when I came into the program, I had really, really messed them up good. And so whenever you are directed by ego, and self-directed ego, it causes us to actually change our instincts into things that aren't good. So it's the self is those instincts, and then when we distort them, those distortions of the instincts, we create wrongs. And those wrongs are the things that we do to ourselves and others. So the ones that are mentioned very clearly are resentments, fears, and harms done to others, and sexual harms. So those are the basics. I'm not going to go into much more detail than that. Hope it made sense. Because I want to cover the actual process of doing the inventory for a minute. The thing about the inventory, and I have a little bit of a confession to make, because my first four step was verbal. It was just spoken to my first sponsor. Okay, well, there's a problem with that. And that's because I can kind of say whatever I want to say, and I can withhold things too, and it certainly is not a way to do a thorough inventory. It's too easy to leave things out. I was good at that. So mental inventories, not so good. They're not to do, just think you can just verbalize it and be done with it. We need, and I definitely needed, tangible evidence. I needed to have something in front of me that really I could see it for the first time, because a lot of the stuff that was going on in my life, I really didn't see the impact of it. The 12 and 12 on page 44 says, evaluating our soul sickness in each instinct requires asking hard and insightful questions. Okay. The written inventory is very subjective, so I'm going to play off subjective and objective, so I have to give you a definition, like you're used to it by now, I think. But anyway, it's based on personal perspective and preferences. What's written exists in the mind and the reality of the individual who's writing it, so it's very personal, it's very subjective. So the format is formal. It's resentments, fears, harms done to others other than sexual, and then the sexual harms. The distortions of the instincts fuel all kinds of emotional, behavioral choices, consequences. Can't think of what else. Oh, and in all the categories, there was nothing that wasn't impacted by my alcoholism, by my drinking. And it took me quite a while to really get a grip on that. So column one identifies, say, the person or the situation or the institution or whatever it was in each. And then column two helps us to review the cause of our, say it was resentment or fear or harms done. And then column three is, what if the instincts were affected? Now, I had trouble with that at first, because I wasn't really following this whole thing very clearly. Fortunately, I've done more than one fourth and fifth, so it's clearer now, much clearer. And then the fourth column is where we identify our part in it. What did we do? What was my behavior? And that was very icky for me. I didn't like that, because it was me having to take responsibility and actually look at how I was affecting other people. And that was very hard at first. The form that I used, and I don't know where it came from, and maybe it came from those Joe McHugh groups, I'm not sure, but my paper has a fifth column. And it was very important to put that fifth column on there, because in that column I was able to identify the actual character defects that were causing the harms, that were causing that I operate under, and what I own, had to own. And those, as they're stated in the big book, I think they say selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, I must have some, frightened, inconsiderate. I added a few things like angry, and I had a few others that I've added over the years. So it's a searching, certainly, and it certainly has to be fearless. I did a lot of what I would call prayer, seeking through prayer, and it was sort of a little adjustment to my help me prayer. Is I needed to get the insights, and I was having a little trouble with that with my first couple of serious four steps. So, as I mentioned before or earlier, this is a spiritual step, and it's a step of reliance on God to help us stay sober, but also to help us to identify what we have to change. And in turn, we get something for that. And I definitely have gotten these things. We gain courage, clarity, and direction. As we analyze our thinking, our emotions, our behaviors, we become very conscious of ourselves. My identity became clear. And I didn't like all that I saw. I think that that's just part of growth, because if I don't like what I see, then I can change it, or I at least have an opportunity to pursue what I need to change. And that's been good, very good. I wanted to say that right now I'm in the process of doing another four step yet again. But it's a wonderful one, because I over the years, it's a four step that involves things that have happened to my daughter, and it was during a time when I was drinking, and when I was trying to deal with life with very little skill. But the neat thing is that I now have a perspective, and I have the tools to be able to do that. And hopefully and prayerfully, someday it'll end up in a ninth step amend with her. But the discovery of the fourth step is very, very powerful. Painfully powerful, but it can be painful as well. I got good news about the fourth step. You ready? It's really, really good news. No one's died from doing a fourth step. So what doesn't kill you does what? Makes you stronger. So that's kind of the gift of the fourth step. So if you haven't done a fourth step yet, I would encourage you to take this courageous step, with because it's a very, very helpful and it's a growing step. It really is. So now I'm down to step five already. So I like step five, but this was a hard step for me. I was a person who stayed in the shadows everywhere. I grew up in a violent home. It was way better. And that twin is the mouthpiece of the family. She's the outspoken one, and I'm not. I'm the one that kind of like stayed in the shadows and kind of just existed and stayed out of the mix and away from the punches. So to admit anything, I just kept everything inside. And I really wasn't very good at, I didn't know as a kid, and even as a grown-up, supposedly grown-up person in my 20s and 30s, I really didn't know how to express feelings even to God. I mean, I just didn't. I just held everything in. So, to admit anything to God, ourselves, and another human being, the exact nature of our wrongs, was a little bit scary. But, as the 12 and 12 said, I love this little, it's just a one sentence quote, the beginning of true kinship with man and God. I just love that. it was where I started to connect with other people and with my higher power, whom I call God. So, the power of admitting the exact nature of our wrongs, what is it? Well, it breaks through denial, and it audibly is telling the truth. I can hear it, and you can hear it. So it's out in the open, and there's power in that. So I'm telling the truth about myself, my feelings, my behaviors. And the first time I did a real fifth step with my sponsor, I didn't know what to expect. I'll get through it. I'll spit it out and get through it. And it was just the most spiritual and connecting experience I've ever had. And of course, it has encouraged me to do more. So it's good. I think that the fifth step is a very intimate step because it does involve God and another person. So, because of that, I think it's very important to choose the right person. The big book says something, I think I wrote it down here. Oh yes, the big book says, a closed-mouthed, understanding friend. Well, they go on to say a clergy member or somebody, or you could be a counselor, whatever. I personally think that someone in the fellowship is a very good choice if they are working their own program and you can trust them. The confidentiality, I think, is important. So, I can't just verbally talk. It's too easy. Well, my first thought was I'll just keep my fourth step. I kind of did. My first fourth step and fifth step to myself. I kind of shared it with me. That was really a bad idea. And the reason that was such a bad idea is because I really am very good at lying to myself. It was a skill that I developed over the years, and I thought I did it very perfectly. And so I became very used to basically lying about everything. Do you ever, somebody, I know you've heard this, you hear it every day, hi, how are you? And the answer is,
fine.
Yeah. That's about as superficial as it gets, I guess, so. So I personally think that a sponsor is the best choice, and the reason is because as you're doing your fifth step, especially if it's the first, fourth, and fifth, they get to know you, and it's really important for your sponsor to know you. And having someone know me was a very difficult thing for me at first, but the other side to it. As you share with them, you get to trust them. So now it's a win-win because they're learning more about you so they can help you more and guide you more. And also, you're trusting for the first time maybe. So it's good. So step five, the reason why it's important to share with another human being, first off, they're a human being. So they've had some similar experiences. And I know one of the most helpful things that my sponsor did was share a brief little snippet of something very similar to what I was sharing. So I knew beyond a shadow of a doubt I wasn't alone. So it's objective. That's neat because they're just hearing you, and so they can give you some feedback that isn't so subjective, and it's not necessarily their stuff. It's they're seeing and they're observing what you're saying, so it's unbiased, hopefully, and it's an analysis that can give you insights. And my sponsor, most of you know her, Gina, she has given me such good awarenesses through that process of me sharing the fifth step. And sometimes it's that I've missed a basic instinct that was affected, or maybe I have not really seen a certain character defect. And I'll tell you this, I don't like hearing it. I don't like getting that feedback, because I got this little thing inside of me that says, like, oh yeah, well, I don't know about that. But I've learned that if I really want to get this, to take in the information, think about it, journal about it, pray about it. And usually, well, I've got to say with her, it's 100% she's right, and I get to grow behind that. So personal awareness and growth is a very important part of these steps. So there's problems when I try to deal with God on my own. See, I had this belief, hey, I don't really need to share this stuff because he knows everything anyway. So I'm off the hook because he already knows. So all I have to do is ask for forgiveness, right? Well, probably not so much, because I think what that did is it kind of kept me from really seriously cleaning house and trying to change, because I was just basically fluffing it off like it really wasn't that important. So when I go it alone on my own, I make a big mess of things. But what I've found in this program, because it is a WE program, I don't have to do anything alone. There's always somebody, even if, say, Gina's not available, there's always somebody in the program I can call. There's always somebody to listen. And that has really helped me a great deal. So, moving right along, I'm almost done. It's all good. What are the positive outcomes of step 5? The big book on page 62 is very specific, so I'm just going to tell you what they are. I added a couple, maybe. Dammed up emotions break out of confinement. Exposure takes the power feelings have had over us away. And I attest to that. Healing peace and tranquility enters our lives. God's presence is felt, and forgiveness is possible through a deeper God consciousness. The burden of guilt and shame, this is a big one for me, so it's very important to add it here. The burden of guilt and shame is relieved, and the door is opened for me to forgive me, to forgive myself. And that was a hard thing, because I thought, oh man, you know, I'm the worst person in the world. Well, I'm a sick person trying to get well. And then, once aware of our defects of character, we have the tools to address each through working steps. We just keep working the steps. And we keep, you know, doing the program service and relying on God for help. So, that's not... When you meet with your sponsor or whoever you're doing your fifth step with, that's not the end of it. And the big book's very clear. And I didn't understand this at home. And I did take the hour, but I didn't really understand until I read it again what I was doing. But we're supposed to, after the fifth step, we're supposed to return home, find a quiet place where we can be quiet for about an hour, and carefully review the fifth step or the whole thing. And then we thank God for being able to know Him better and being able to share this process. And that is when I really started to let go of the yuck that was in my life, of my creation, of my doing. And it's just a powerful process, and so I hope that that's something that you have experienced also. And then I think what I'll do is end with the fifth step promises, and they are wonderful. It's on page 75 in the big book. Once we have taken this step, withholding nothing, we are delighted. We can look the world in the eye, and maybe the people around us too. We can be alone at perfect peace and ease. Our fears fall from us. We begin to feel the nearness of our Creator. We may have had certain spiritual beliefs, but now we begin to have a spiritual experience. The feeling that the drink problem has disappeared will often come strongly. We feel we are on the broad highway, walking hand in hand with the Spirit of the universe. That's it.
All right. Thank you, Marilyn. Now, it is time for the question portion.
Carolyn?
Do you have a question?
I'm just waving.
Oh, okay. Good thing you're not at an auction. Any questions here in the room? Any questions on Zoom? Just go ahead and unmute yourself and fire away. All right.
You're
going to break the ice.
I was going to say, I'll bite. I'll start.
Oh, thank you.
Hi, Marilyn. Thank you again for sharing your experience, strength, and hope, and your point of view on how you did steps. But what I was, you know, is that you were talking about, like, doing your fourth step in your head, and then I don't know how you take a fifth step in your head, but I was wondering, what was the outcome of that? And was it, you know, did you drink? Did you want to drink? Did you become more uncomfortable? What the heck happened?
Restless, irritable, and discontent, basically. The thing is, I was trying to get off easy. And I wasn't really taking this process seriously. Part of it was that I wasn't understanding it thoroughly. And getting into the books, it really helps that. One of the things that I felt tremendous responsibility about was that I was sponsoring people. So I need to be doing what I'm suggesting for other people to do. So I did everything in my head before I came into this program, and it wasn't a very pleasant place to be. I've suffered from a young child from depression, so that skews a lot of things. But my willfulness, my ego, everything skews that. So this is a dangerous place. This is a safer place than here. So, and fortunately, when I got my next sponsor, that wasn't going to happen. It was going to happen on paper, and we were going to do a real fifth step. So,
and that would be another question then. How did the sponsor just sit still with that? I mean, I can't imagine me sponsoring someone and allowing them to just run that by me and say, well, I took this in my head. Okay. So how does that happen?
Well, there are different qualities of sponsors, and some of us maybe shouldn't sponsor until we've done the steps formally. One of the things that I've discovered over the years is that sometimes in rehabs will have people do their first three steps. That ain't enough. And the assumption is that they're going to get a sponsor and go home and work the steps, but that isn't always what happens. And I think that that's kind of what happened with me. So.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Welcome.
I'm an alcoholic. My name is Rick. I have a question on that forgiveness in step five. What helped you to forgive yourself, you know, after a time? Because I can still have a problem with that, you know, in the fifth step, you know, for some whatever reason. sometimes I tend to think that I let it go, but then it creeps up back up on me again, and haven't really forgiven myself totally on one thing or another. Is there anything that might have helped you to get through it, and how long if you can't get through it?
Well, that's a good question. I will have to say that I'm still working on forgiving myself on some things,
okay.
Which is why there's always going to be a reason, I think, in my life to do a fourth and fifth, because there's things that come up. I get little memory blips that come up, and I go, oh my gosh, and sometimes I can just talk them out with my sponsor, but other times I really need to chew on it. But I think the value of the step and the way it's a spiritual step. So the first thing that I had to do is get down on my knees and ask for forgiveness from God, because I'm a child of God. And I really screwed up some things in my behaviors and my ego and my self-will and all that happy stuff. So that was the first part of it. But the second thing is, I have to remind myself that God forgave me, so why am I not forgiving myself? Why am I holding on to stuff that I've been forgiven for? And that's where the grace and mercy of a loving higher power comes in. So if he can forgive me, or my higher power, then why can't I forgive myself? So that's been a process, and I have to keep reminding myself of that.
Thanks, Marilyn. But that's the same thing I go through. That's what really helps me. Someone had said to me some years ago, do you believe that God forgives you? And I said, well, yeah, of course, yeah, I do.
Mm-hmm.
Are you then, why can't you forgive yourself? Are you better than he?
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah.
You have better, more power than he that you can't forgive
yeah.
yourself. So that's what I always refer back to when I'm having mm-hmm. a hard time. I guess my pride and my ego kind of gets in the way, and my guilt or whatever, mm-hmm. I don't know. And one other thing, if I may. When I, the first time I did a, well, twice I did it with this one sponsor, and the fourth step, after we were all done and everything, after I had it all written out on the paper, which I really liked, and it really was effective for me to really feel that I was growing, after we discussed the fourth step and everything, we went outside with a can and everything, we lit it and put it in the can, well, we prayed first, and then it was like lifting it up to God. Giving it to mm-hmm. him. And I thought that was pretty neat. What is your thoughts on that?
Well, there's two thoughts. I think that there are some very powerful rituals that we can do that kind of help us to really get the feeling of being forgiven and letting go. So the burning ceremony, I've done it a few times, and it is a very powerful thing. I have a quick forgetter. So now what I do is I hold on to my four-step inventory. And the reason is I'm hoping, and my intention is to grow beyond those things. And if I review them from time to time, I can see if I have grown, and I can be grateful for the growth that I've experienced, but then it also points to some things I still need to work on. And forgiveness is one of them.
The second time I did my fourth step, I did the same thing. I'm a quick forgetter, so I couldn't really remember.
Uh-huh.
I didn't remember everything I could have thoroughly did. I did
yeah.
to my best ability the first time, but there was other things that creeped out, you know. And I made a copy of my fourth step. But I didn't tell my sponsor about it, just so I can reflect. I didn't
yes.
kill anybody or anything. I wasn't even, if I killed somebody, it was my secret. I wouldn't want somebody to fight him, so I didn't have to worry about that. You know what I mean? So, but I made a copy for my own personal reference, so
yeah.
I can reflect back and
yeah.
try to remember. Well, I already brought that up, but it's still bugging me.
Yeah.
Whatever works, I guess. Right?
Yeah. Well, my intention is to keep growing. And sometimes I have to go back to do that.
Right. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Any other questions in the room here?
Sure, I've got a question.
My name is Trevor. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Trevor.
And thank you very much, Marilyn, for your great presentation. Question, fourth step, fifth step, beginning, you know, it says beginning of a lifetime process. Where do you kind of make the distinction about making a full-blown or a big long inventory versus maybe a spot check, or like they talk about in our literature, the annual or that type of thing, like as in a 10th step?
Well, I think that the 10th step is that's our daily, you know, process and evaluation of our behaviors and so on and so forth. But as I referenced before, when something comes up, because I don't have clear memories all the time. But sometimes I think it's a spirit thing where I get a little snippet of something, and I'll sit with it for a bit, but then sometimes it grows into something else, then I realize, oh boy, I need to do some formal work on this. I did one. I did a fourth step with my sister about, I'd say maybe 2 years ago, maybe not quite that long. I did it on a situation. My sister, as I said, is the vocal one in the family. She's got a pretty hot temper, and it doesn't take much to have her kind of like take your inventory, so to speak. So she had done that, and I thought, I need to go back, because this is a lifelong thing. This was something that's not just a one-and-done thing with her. So I went back from childhood on up, and I reviewed my wrongs in those situations. And you know what the biggest one was? Me not talking. Me not saying anything, just being passive, backing off and letting her have her little la la la, and then be done with it, because it was more comfortable for me to do that. So so I carried it out all the way through. I did the fourth, the fifth was my sponsor. I got my biggest character defect from that one was dishonesty. I was not telling her, I was not asserting what I needed in the situation, any situation, from being young up. So, of course, it ended up in a ninth step. So, at the ninth step, I decided I wrote it down. And I went to her home and asked if I could come in. And she knows the steps. She knows the process. And so she let me come in, and I did my ninth step. And it didn't take long. It was only one page. And as soon as I was done, she took me apart piece by piece. And I kept having to say, this is for me. This is my spiritual process. This is because I did a wrong, and I'm going to make amends for it. And the beautiful, it was 2 years ago, the beautiful part of that, it's never happened again. And I handed her the paper, and I thanked her for her time. I said, I love you, and I left. But it has made a difference. So.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
Hi, Marilyn. Hi. Thanks again. You know, as you were telling that story, I was wondering then, apparently some of this was for conduct through the time you were sober as well. Am I understanding
that
right?
Yes.
And so to use a fourth step for conduct that might not have been maybe up to our standards or up to our new, better standards or things that then that's an acceptable use of a fourth step process. Is that kind of how you would see that?
Yes. Well, the reason I went back was because it was a pattern that I've been doing all my life. And she's been here for 8 years now after she retired. She asked very nicely if she could come and live near me. And that's what she did. And I was very excited about that. But we still have that issue, and part of it was mine. Most of it was mine because I never set a boundary, or I just let things go.
And thank you for saying that, because for me, it's some of it is a process of just identifying my patterns.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, like we talk about, like we date the same man over and over again with a different name and face, and that's because that's me doing that. Or I display the same conduct over and over again because it's me working out my defect somehow. So thank you so much for just articulating that so nicely. And I have other work to do, but I'm going to just keep that to myself.
Okay.
But thank you so much for the pattern discovery process of it as well. It's not just vomiting up any bad thing. It's kind of learning what's cooking between our own ears, kind of, and in our own heart. So thanks so much, Marilyn.
Oh, thank you.
Hi, Carolyn Alcoholic. Thanks so much. You've mentioned the Joe McHugh books, or maybe you went to a seminar or something. Could you expand upon that a little bit?
Yeah, the Joe McHugh book is The Steps We Took. And back a few years, probably some of you know it better than I do, but there's been seminars going on in West County, around anyway, I guess over in New York too, of actually going through the Joe McHugh book. And it is the 12 steps. And it's powerful. It's well worth doing. Yeah. So, has anyone done that here? Oh, yeah. See?
Nobody on Zoom?
Anyone on Zoom?
Oh, all right.
Marilyn, Joe McHugh, is that the same as Joe that does the big book study with Joe and Charlie?
I'm not sure if he was a later one. Does anyone know? Was he a later one, Buzz? Was he original? Yeah, I thought he was one of the originals, so he would be the Joe of the Joe and Charlie.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and he was an older man, and people wanted him to write it down, and that's where the steps we took came from.
Okay,
so,
okay.
It is powerful.
Yeah, because I do the tapes, and I sponsor women with Joe and Charlie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, thanks.
Thanks, Marilyn. I appreciate it. I have a quick question. When, you know, it says when you read about, you read your fifth step to someone who, you know, you trust or whatever, whether it be a clergy person. Have you ever sponsored somebody that didn't read their fifth step to you? And how did you deal with that?
Actually, that's never happened to me. Sorry. I think it's just been a process that I just assumed they would, and they did. But, you know, I never have. But I don't know how I would feel about that. Because I think it's a valuable thing to get to know the person and to trust.
Yeah, I did have that experience, and that's just how I handled it. I said, how can I sponsor you if I don't know anything?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was sort of like that inventory that you did in your head.
Yeah. Yeah.
If that's it for questions, then Marilyn, thank you very much.
Bye, folks on Zoom.